Perhaps understandably, given her early life, Irene was a cautious, thoughtful young lady. Rather than spending her wages on silks and furs as some of the other girls did, she squirreled it away in a savings account. She had a narrow face and nose with dark eyes and hair. The only picture of her that survived shows her somewhat downcast. A month after Irene started, another new employee began work. But this was no dial painter striding into a new job. This was Arthur Roeder, a highly successful businessman who was the company's new treasurer. He'd already demonstrated a skill for seizing career opportunities. Though he had left university without a degree, he descended rapidly through the ranks of his chosen career. A round-faced, smart-looking man with a Roman nose and thin lips, he favoured bow ties and pomade, which he slicked through his dark hair to press it close to his skull. He was based at the head office in New York and now took on responsibility for the dial painters. Though he said he was in the studio on numerous occasions, his presence there was an exception, as most of the executives rarely went inside. In fact, of the firm's top men, Grace Fryer remembered von Sohotsky passing through her place of work just once. She didn't pay it much attention at the time, but it would come to take on a great significance. She was at her desk as usual that day, lipping and dipping her brush, as were all the other girls. Von Sohotsky, as per his usual, had his head full of ideas and complex science as he walked briskly about his work. On this occasion, as he passed swiftly through the studio, he stopped and looked straight at her and at what she was doing, as though seeing her actions for the first time. Grace glanced up at him. He was a memorable-looking man, with a dominant nose and close-cut dark hair above his slightly protruding ears. Conscious of the pace of work around her, she bent again to her task and slipped the brush between her lips. "Do not do that," he said to her suddenly. Grace paused and looked up, perplexed. This was how you did the job, how all the girls did it. "Do not do that," he said to her again. "You will get sick." And then he was on his way. Grace was utterly confused. Never one to back down from something she thought needed further investigation, she went straight over to Miss Rooney. But Miss Rooney merely repeated what the girls had already been told. "She told me there was nothing to it," Grace later recalled. "She told me it was not harmful." So Grace went back to her work. Lip, dip, paint. There was a war on, after all. But not for much longer. On 11th of November 1918, the guns fell silent. Peace reigned. More than 116,000 American soldiers had lost their lives in the war. The total death toll for all sides was around 17 million. And in that moment of the armistice, the Radium Girls, the company executives and the world gave thanks that the brutal, bloody conflict was over. Enough people had died. Now, they thought, it was time for living. Chapter 4. Exactly 1 month after the armistice, Quinta Maggia put those seize-the-day principles into action, marrying James MacDonald. He was a cheery man of Irish heritage who worked as a chain store manager. The newlyweds set up home in a two-storey cottage. To begin with, Quinta was still dial painting, but that didn't last long. She left the firm in February 1919 and soon fell pregnant. Her daughter, Helen, would be born 2 days after Thanksgiving. Nor was she the only dial painter to depart. The war was over. The girls were growing up.